Hi.
Okay, you can hear me in spite of the rumble behind me. The construction is on again, off again. Okay, the last week. Oof, not even a full week. Just think, this time next week you'll be all done with this course. The end of this week you'll be all done with this course. And I didn't think to put up the reserves. Computer's not even on. Okay. I'll put those up. Remind me to put those up at the end to reduce it. Okay, we'll warm that up. Okay, questions? The class today, class on Wednesday, review session immediately after class on Wednesday. Review session Thursday at 12:30. I'll put the times and locations up there on the web, and I'll put them up later at the end, before the end of class, because the computer's warming up for now. Okay. We're still working on six, the assignment six. We will try to have it here on Wednesday. If not, it definitely will be here at the final. That may be the best I can accomplish. Julie's doing fine. I'm just way behind. Sorry. Questions? The exam covers everything on Friday at 4. On Friday at 4 in here. Multiple choice, short answer, short essay, something creative if Julie comes up with something good, or Greg. Yes. It's at 4 here on Friday. Right here. Bring a number 2 pencil, because otherwise you have to use one of those obnoxious golf pencils without an eraser. So bring your own, and a spare to loan to somebody else. Okay. What I want to do today is talk about divorce, separation and divorce, as a way of illustrating what happens when you apply a Bronfenbrennerian perspective to understanding a major family event. And I'll try to do this fairly straightforwardly, but I wanted to ask you first to think with me a bit about what happens to the ecosystem when parents go through a divorce. Okay? So I'd like to ask you to, just on paper, but not to hand in, I'm going to divide you into two groups. And the left and right sections, your question is, and I want you just to write individually, just write for 2 or 3 minutes. On the side, your question is, when parents divorce, what happens to their ecosystem? The parents. Okay. Middle sections, your question is, when parents divorce, what happens to the kids' ecosystem? So think about Bronfenbrenner, all the different levels or aspects of the ecosystem. Just jot down some of your ideas quickly about what happens to the parents' ecosystems on the side and the center sections, what happens to the child's ecosystem when parents divorce. All the good ideas you can come up with on the spur of the moment. Find somebody else in your section and compare your notes and see if you've covered everything about the ecosystem. Any random person in your section. Feel free to get up. Okay, what'd you come up with, quickly? What'd you come up with? Some of the changes in the parent ecosystem when they separate. What? New settings? What? Okay. Did you see the movie The War of the Roses?
Okay.
Sometimes they don't change settings. Well, they did. What did they do? They moved to the opposite ends of the house in the War of the Roses, but they needed to stay together. Other things. New job. So new settings. Why would people need a new job when they divorce?
Right. Very important.
Many women particularly find that if they've been stay home and working part-time, they're expected to increase their income. And because the family is maintaining two settings for home, two really can't live separately as cheaply as two can live in one house. You have two refrigerators, two everythings. Okay. One more on that side. John. Okay. Change in the relations. People get happier with each other, typically. Right. And the roles. Parents become do-it-all-by-yourself parents. That's one change in the role, how you parent when there's only one of you in the household with kids at a time. You also become an ex-spouse or a divorcing spouse during the process of separation. And for some people, then a dating person, a single eligible. If you had enough time and energy, you could date. And so the role changes. Other changes for parents? Power. Right, because what happens when people separate is that they are parenting on their own. And as you're parenting on your own, you don't have to worry about the other person. Except when the kids are with the other person. Then you get to worry about them all the time when that person has more power in the parenting role. So in the dyad, there is typically a power shift, if not struggle, as parents try to maintain their influence over children and control over what goes on and protect the children from the other parent. Another change for parents in the parents' ecosystem? Any of you on either side come up with an exosystem change or two or three? I won't ask them about children. No? Parental exosystem changes? Okay, how's that exosystem change? In the macro system, the role carries some stigma. Why did he blow his marriage, right? Yeah. Damaged goods. Okay. Exosystem? Going once, going twice? What? Yeah, finances. These people on the side ought to... How many of you have divorced parents? Okay. What happened to their exosystem? Okay. Were you ever with the other parent at some point? Okay. So, for the parents, the other parent's household is often an exosystem setting. A great deal happens there that influences the parent and the parent's home microsystem. Okay. How many of you have parents who no longer are welcome in the homes of their former in-laws, your grandparents? Let me think. So extended family on the in-law side often becomes what was a mesosystem setting becomes an exosystem setting. They all get together and talk about you and trash you to your children. But that's an exosystem setting. So their ecosystem may change dramatically. In part because children are in settings that the parent is no longer welcome in. I had a report over the weekend that a separation was in the process of happening, and the person who was responsible for the separation not only was not going to be welcome in his in-law's home again, he wasn't going to be welcome in his parents' home because of the way he went about doing the separation. His parents told him that he was not welcome. Oh, that's parents. Okay. Anything else that you came up with that we haven't mentioned so far? You wrote a lot. You talked a lot. Okay. You did the affect and reciprocity stuff. Okay, what happens to the kids' ecosystem? Okay, not too fast. Okay. Mesosystem, new settings, counselor's office, other parents' home, or two homes. And they become more responsible for the mesosystem connections between settings. The many kids are required to take more responsibility for communication. The role of child in a divorced family is often more responsible. Okay, microsystem changes, affect, often new dyads, and shifting the affect because of the new dyads that are being created. Often a change in the reciprocity in the parent-child role, as children sometimes are taking on responsibility for supporting a parent who's having a difficult time with a separation or with a divorce. So the change in the role goes along with that reciprocity. Other things that you came up with? Okay, so what change? Change in activities. The joint activities with one parent may be reduced. They may change what activities they can do. Activities may be disrupted. There may be new activities, new joint activities that become part of the microsystem in the new setting that's created. So if one parent has sole responsibility at times and hasn't had that before, that parent often has to come up with new activities and
figure out ways to engage in joint activities with children that she or he may not have done before.
How about exosystem stuff? Okay, so one of the exosystem changes may be that a parent has a setting in which the kids don't go. There may not be contact with that parent in that parent's setting, but the parent is connected to the home setting by child support payments or by the presence of one's absence and not being there. So the parent's home may become an exosystem setting for kids who don't go into that home. Okay, so couples counseling for the parents might become an exosystem setting. Other settings that parents are involved in that kids aren't?
Dating?
Yeah. Parents usually don't drag their kids along on dates, overnights to their new boyfriend's house.
Usually don't drag their kids along. Some people do, but good middle class people don't. How about the attorney's offices? Parents spend time in attorney's offices making decisions about children. Family court. Mediation. Settings where important decisions are made about children by parents and by other people. Other changes in children's ecosystem? Anything? That we haven't covered so far? How about affect with parents? How many of you have divorced parents? How many of you had some change in the affect in your relationship with one or both parents? Decrease in positive affect with one parent is fairly common. Death threats, for example, anger, physical attacks, those sorts of things. Children often don't like it when parents get separated or divorced. They get over it in a few weeks and then everything's fine again. Or not. Sometimes it takes a few years. And sometimes, you know, when a parent is on a deathbed, then maybe you will forgive and have a positive relationship. But for some people, that's a long, long process of trying to reduce the negative aspect, at least, in the parental, the parent-child relationship. The comment is that sometimes after a separation or divorce, the parental dyads, the dyad with the parent, the parent-child dyad, become better, particularly with one of the parents. And that is often a result of the single parenting being done by a parent who has not been particularly involved as a parent before the divorce.
often children discover that they can relate better to one parent when they're with that parent alone. And they have to. So one of the things that happens is that you take apart the triad that some of you refer to your parents as the rent, you know, the, there they are, and you think of them as a unit. And when they separate, one of the consequences is that you have to pay more attention to each one. You have to figure out how to relate to them when they're not together. So if you're spending your month in the summer with a parent that you've never spent time alone with, you have to figure out how to do it. And that requires sometimes a change in affect, or results in a change in affect and increased reciprocity, and more attention to the balance of power in the relationship. So that one always touches a personal note for me, because both of my kids, after our divorce, independently, separately, at some point during their late teens, both of them said that they actually enjoyed their parents more after we divorced, because they spent time with each of us and had to get to know us as individuals, and saw that we were actually quite different, but that was something they hadn't understood when we were together. They just treated us as a unit. And as they got to know us individually, they discovered that we were kind of fun separately. And they developed different joint activities with each of us. So the dyadic relationships became more separate, more differentiated for both of them. Any other thoughts? I'm going to go back over some of these. Any other thoughts about changes in the ecosystem? Yes. Okay. Yep. Yep. That's good. Yeah. Mesosystem. When the home setting becomes a mesosystem instead of just a single setting, then you have the opportunity as a child to experience diversity across your settings. And we all know that, as Bronfenbrenner says, the greater diversity that you experience in settings, the more settings you get into, the more richly connected your mesosystem settings are, the better. Right? So divorce gives kids an opportunity to develop, I don't know why more parents don't do it, because it's really good for kids to be able to create those multiple settings and multiple roles, because they see their parents as really different. And the kids develop the ability to differentiate between settings and figure out how to act in those settings where parents have different standards and different... this is tongue-in-cheek, but it is a way of thinking about applying Bronfenbrenner to the developmental effects of divorce on kids, which are potentially significant and positive. And that's something that often gets lost. People will say that kids grow up faster, they learn to take responsibility, and that is true, and those are good things. So some parents do their kids a favor, particularly if they can avoid the negative affect, because they're creating a set of microsystems, a home mesosystem, and relationships which have less negative affect in them over time. And if you think about the microsystem that some of us create for our children, where the affect is negative and there's power struggles between the parents and lack of reciprocity, those microsystems are not particularly good for kids' development. So you have the opportunity to create a mesosystem that will be positive. Okay, let me back up and let me give you some biases first. One is that I've been teaching about and consulting with people and doing evaluations of families for many years, and writing about divorce. And there are two or three things that I'm convinced of. One is that using a developmental approach helps you understand divorce a lot better and also give better advice to people, including kids, about how to deal with it, because if you think about the developmental potential in the ecosystem changes that are taking place, you can see in many cases that parents are not doing a good job, and with a few small changes, they might be able to do a much better job. So that's one of the biases I take, is let's look at it psychologically. The second bias is that I do not buy the general cultural argument that divorce is bad for kids, because that's not really supported by the research. And many people hang on to an interpretation of the effects of divorce that is based on very poor research and unsubstantiated assumptions on their part. So let me give you the major one, because it may be the one that you hear most often. And that is the argument that often I hear from college students. It's a complaint. My parents' divorce made it impossible for me to trust and make commitments in relationships, so I'm very shy about relationships. And they blame that on the parents' divorce. It's bullshit. It's just bullshit. Divorce doesn't cause anything. Relationships cause things. Transactions cause things. And staying together in a household where there's a great deal of conflict, where people can't sort that out, will cause some negative things. But often parents are taking a step toward making things a lot better, particularly if they do it well. If that's their goal, to make things a lot better, they'll do it well. And if they can avoid putting the kids in the middle and things like that. But let me suggest why the complaint from 20-somethings that their relationship problems are the result of their parents' divorce. The first problem with that is that all 20-somethings should be shy about making commitments in relationships, because that's part of being 20-something. Anybody who is making a solid, trusting commitment for a lifetime at the age of 20 deserves the problem that he's going to have later. We should be wary about commitments. That's part of the developmental phenomenon of the late teens and early 20s. It's for exploring relationships and hurting each other gently and discovering that you can't trust this person or this relationship isn't good for you. That has nothing to do with your parents. It has to do with who you are. The second reason I have come to that conclusion is that you may be able to blame your parents for some difficulties in relationships, but it's because you share genes with them. And their temperaments have made it difficult for them to stay married. And so they get divorced. And it's not the divorce that has been the difficulty for you. It's the fact that you may have their temperament, which makes it difficult to have harmonious relationships. So it may be that parents really do cause their kids to get divorced by passing on genes that make it difficult to have good relationships. Okay, now you can argue with me, and then we'll talk about the developmentology. Okay.
So my parents
have
been married for
30
years, and my mom, who is probably the one person in the world that I trust the most, she is not my dad, and I'm forgiven. So the fact that maybe now I'm in that position, I don't think that's
I think that what you have is trust of your mother and a sense of betrayal. Issues not with men, but
probably some sense of betrayal about what your parents have done, which all of us have as a result of the experience of divorce or disappointment by our parents. But that should not, there's no reason for that to make it difficult for us to trust a partner. When we find a partner who is good for us, good for our development, and when we're not trying to partner on the basis of finding somebody to take over for the parent, when we're not trying to find a partner while we're in the middle of dealing with our parents' divorce, which will make any of our relationships problematic. But to be concerned about your mother after 30 years, that's a big betrayal. And I don't think that anybody should take lightly, and don't misinterpret me, divorce is always painful. Separation of parents is always a disaster. It's always painful for everybody involved. And it takes a long time to recover from that. It is a process that leads to deep grief, and some of it will last all of our lives, and we need to recognize that. But that grief is the same kind of grief that happens when a parent dies. It's the same kind of grief that happens when a child dies. Those griefs are part of life. They do not need to change or diminish our ability to have close and strong relationships in a committed relationship with a partner. If you would like to rephrase, instead of coming to talk about, I can't make a commitment in a relationship, I have difficulty with relationships because my parents divorced, the appropriate complaint, there are several of them. One of those appropriate complaints is, my parents destroyed my universe and my view of the world by separating without warning. My parents really screwed me up and ruined my year, whichever year it was, by divorcing and doing it badly. My parents' inability to communicate through their divorce demonstrated for me that, boy, they are really limited people. People with problems. I didn't understand that before. Now I do understand it. So my view of the world is more valid because I understand that my parents don't always know the answers to things. My parents are capable of engaging their kids in inappropriate relationships and fighting with each other inappropriately and being nasty to each other. Those are legitimate complaints. And parents who give their kids those complaints and don't help their kids deal with them, I want to take them out behind the bar and snap them a little bit. But what I want you to do is be very careful about which parts of the divorce and which parts of your parents' behavior you take on. And I want you to be very clear that divorce should be grieved, has to be grieved, has to be made sense out of. But you don't have to take on, and you don't have to make a connection between what they did and normal developmental issues that come up. Normal developmental issues apply to all of us. And learning to trust in relationships is not easy for most of us when we're partnering. Being able to deal with our own relationships better than our parents did is one of the possibilities as a consequence of divorce, because we study what our parents do. But the trust issue is not necessarily between us and our partners. It's trusting our parents. And the lesson to be learned is, how do I deal with my children in a way that I don't betray their trust over time? Okay. Thank you. That helps really clarify that divorce is not something you don't want to go through. You don't want to do it for your kids. It should be the very last resort. And it should not be done without warning, which it often is. And when we do it, we need to understand that our kids will be pissed at us. And we need to deal with that appropriately. And when we're pissed at our parents, we need to deal with that appropriately, too. We need to be clear about how we feel. We need to be able to sit down with our parents and tell them, I feel dramatically betrayed. How are you going to make that up to me? How are we going to reestablish our relationship? How are we going to build the reciprocity and the positive aspect back into our relationship? Can we do that? The comment is that having your parents divorce changes your relationships, and it probably should. What it does is make it more important for us to be clear in our communication with our partners, to be clear about our relationship expectations and our feelings, and it should make us listen better to our partners. And it should make us less tolerant of relationships that don't have high reciprocity and equal power and a lot of communication. If in getting to that better place in relationships, relationships die, they don't make it, they fall by the wayside, that's good. That's not an issue that says that that's not the reason. Let me start that sentence over. That doesn't mean that you're having difficulty in committing or trusting. It means your standards for a relationship have improved. They've increased because it's more important to you. And you're not putting up with, you're not making commitments to inferior relationships. But that's not a problem. You should never make a commitment to an inferior relationship. And having your parents get divorced raises questions about what is a high-quality relationship. That's good. It improves the validity of your view of the world. And you're not going to trust somebody without a lot of evidence that person is trustworthy. That's not a trust issue. That's smart relationships. And that's a very important developmental distinction. So there are lessons to be learned in our parents' bad relationships, whether they stay together or divorce. We need to be looking at our parents' relationships and saying, how can I do it better? How can I do it better? Just as we look at our parents' divorces and say, how can I do that better if I divorce? You know, all you need to do is go through one bad one to figure out how you would do it well so that you didn't visit the same kinds of problems on your kids. And when I do the court workshop in family court, we have a 4-hour workshop that we created, which you have to go through in Vermont if you have kids and get separated. One of the fun things in that workshop is that we often have parents who had their parents divorced. And I like to ask them, do you want to do it the same way your parents did? And they go, oh my God, no, of course not. They don't. And that gives us the basis for talking about how they're going to deal with their kids, because they get committed to doing it better. What's really fun sometimes is to do the workshop when I have somebody who's getting divorced the third or fourth time. And I always ask, how many of you have been through this before? And they raise their hands and they say, my second time. Then I ask, anybody been through it three times? And I occasionally have people who are getting divorced for the third or fourth time. And then I ask, with kids? And sometimes they say, yeah. Okay, what have you learned? And they can teach the workshop because they've made every mistake in the book. And this time they're determined not to make those mistakes with their kids. So they learn. And it's very helpful for the parents to hear each other talk about what they did that was wrong. And then I like to just turn over the workshop to those parents who've done it before and did it badly and know what they did that was wrong. And then they talk about it. I'd like to be able to offer them a follow-up, but we don't have enough time. A follow-up workshop that is designed to get them to think about how they're going to help their kids make sense out of the divorce as their kids start to get into relationships and become parents themselves. When I have the opportunity to work with a group of parents on that issue, that's always fascinating. Because most parents recognize that they've made mistakes in the way they did it. And they would do things differently. And one of the things that I do in that workshop is to tell them, okay, you've recognized that you've made two or three really bad mistakes and you've hurt your kids by the way you did your divorce. Not that you did the divorce, but the way you did it. You created a problem. When are you going to apologize to your children and tell them what you wish you had done? And then they go, oh. Yeah. Okay. You're not finished with your divorce until you apologize to your children and explain what you wish you had done better. Not what you wish the other parent had done better, what you wish you had done differently. And I never get feedback, well, I rarely get feedback from those parents that they actually went and did it. I do know some parents who've done it, and I've had a nice conversation with them, and they say, it never occurred to me to apologize to my kids for all the pain I gave them. Please, when your parents, if you hurt your kids, apologize to them. It's a little thing, but it's really, really important. It's really important for your kids to know that you screwed up and that you know it and that you wouldn't do it the same way the second time or third time around. Okay. Other... Anyone take exceptions to my blanket statement? That's why I make them, so people can argue with me. Okay. Sure.
Your kind of research
and
what you kind of said, you factor in educational level, not everybody
yep.
taking HDMI, not everybody thinks that way, not everybody learns from their mistakes.
Right.
So you're saying that people aren't hurt by divorce, they could be hurt by apps that happen after that,
right.
or people themselves.
Yep. It's the comment is, does education help? No. Education about relationships might. But there are so few people in the world who have any education about how to have a good relationship in a conflict situation that relation that research doesn't get done. Literally, there are so few people who have any training on how to maintain reasonable relationships with their kids in a high-conflict situation, that we can only assume that if we educated everybody on how to do divorce, there might be some good. What we get is a lot of people saying, I wish I had known this before. And we regularly, we do 2,400 parents a year in Vermont, and we get probably 200 parents a year saying that the workshop that we do on parenting through divorce should be required before people have kids. And it's basic stuff. And what can you do in 4 hours? We do very basic stuff. And we often get a request for a follow-up workshop on relationship skills because people recognize that they don't know a diddly squat about having a reasonable relationship. They don't know anything about communicating with each other. In good times, they don't communicate well. And I'm not at all convinced that education does much for them. Intelligence might have a little bit to do with it, and that's, of course, related to education. The higher your intelligence, the more education you're likely to get. But we don't measure for interpersonal intelligence, which really helps a lot. And there are a lot of highly IQ'd people and degreed people who don't have much. Don't have much interpersonal intelligence. In Larry's ideal world, you wouldn't be able to go through puberty without education about communication. You wouldn't be able to have sperm or ova without taking a series of parenting courses. You wouldn't be able to get married. You wouldn't be able to get a marriage license without a test that is at least as sophisticated as the driver education exam. You have to take a test to become a barber, psychologist, driver. To mess around with anybody else's life, you have to have some kind of license, except in marriage or parenting. So in Larry's ideal world, people would know a lot more about communication skills, and including Larry. I'm not exempt from being able to screw up a good relationship or to miscommunicate with my kids. And in some states, you can still get divorced with kids without having to have any kind of education about that. You never have to read a book about relationships. You never have to read a book about child-rearing to be a parent. And that says something about the macro system. We don't really... No, you decide what it means about the macro system. Okay, let me talk more specifically about a few of these items. In the first place, divorce is not an event. That's why it's difficult for me when people say divorce causes X, Y, and Z. Divorce is a process that takes a judge's signature, and it lasts for exactly as long as it takes the judge to sign the form. Bad relationships can take place over an entire lifetime. And divorces generally are not undertaken by people who are happy with their relationship. On the other hand, marriages usually are. So something happens between marriage, unless... Remember what I said about weddings? Remember what I said about the night before your wedding? If you don't want to do it, don't be afraid to bail. Did I say that? Uh-huh. You don't have to run away to New Mexico and claim that you were kidnapped. No. You don't have to do that. You can just say, you know, I want to put everything on hold for a few months while I get my head together. In spite of the fact that 600 people have been invited to this wedding. I guess if I invited 600 people to a wedding with how many bridesmaids? 14. 14 bridesmaids. The whole town was involved in that wedding, and the woman said, I can't do this. But she couldn't do that directly. She had to run away. Literally, she went running and never came back. You've been following CNN, right? They've interviewed her. It's wonderful. And now they're going to charge her with filing a false report. It would have been okay if she'd just run away, but claiming she'd been abducted, that's a no-no. You don't lie about that. Feds don't like that. Okay. It's a long process, and divorce is a milestone in it. And the effect on the parent-child dyads and on the microsystem generally can be so bad and so long-lasting that children learn a great deal that is not developmentally good for them. They learn about relating to people who are unhappy. They learn about caring for their parents in ways that they shouldn't have to learn. They learn about negative affect. They get to model
their own relationships later after the bad relationships that they've experienced. And over time, the longer the conflict in the marital relationship goes on, the greater the long-term effects for the child. That's totally independent of divorce. It doesn't matter whether you're people who never married and living together, raising children, or people who are married and never get divorced. The greater the degree of parental conflict, and the longer that parental conflict is part of the microsystem, the worse the developmental outcomes for kids. Conflict is bad for children. Negative affect in the microsystem corrodes children. And one of the precipitates of divorce, one of the reasons people decide to separate, is that they see that developmental effect. People who've been at each other's throats for years can continue to do that the rest of their lives. But often they see the harmful effects that their conflict is having on their children. So they look at that and say, okay, we need to quit this. Counseling for 5 years didn't work. We just need to separate and let our kids be in microsystems that don't have that negative affect. Then the crucial element is to create a home mesosystem that doesn't continue that conflict. The bad developmental outcomes for divorce are when that conflict is continued between the parents and divorce didn't help. They just keep on being nasty to each other. Those are the divorces that have the biggest impact on kids. Okay. I've said you create a home mesosystem. You know what a nuclear family is? The nuclear family has mom and dad as the nucleus. And then kids. So that's the sociological term. The couple relationship creates the home, creates the family, for sociologists, not for me, but for sociologists. And that's the nucleus, and that's the family. Now that's an interesting part of our macrosystem heritage, and I'm glad to see it go. Because when you have that view of the family, then you take one parent and throw them out, and that's called a divorce. And then you have a family which is single parent. It's broken because mom is gone. It's not whole. It's defective. It's incompetent. And that has nothing to do with how it actually functions. And then you have this person who's been ejected out there in some new role. That view supports a number of the problems with the way parents deal with divorce. It means that you throw somebody out because that somebody is bad, okay, by definition. So that means you support a view of fault in the divorce rather than thinking about the transaction between them. It means that if you're the parent who finally says, this is destructive to the kids, and for their sake you leave, you become the bad person. I'm not sure that's... Well, I'll let you decide whether that's pertinent. It also means then you have the whole notion of broken and relationships between the out-parent and the in-parent. Divorces work much better if you think of them as creating families that have two nuclei. And if you translate that to an ecosystem notion, it's a home mesosystem. The other parent's setting is perhaps an exosystem setting for the parent, but for the kids, this is the way they see their family. Everybody is part of their family. And anybody new who comes in joins that family. So the extended binuclear family includes new partners and their children.
and pets. And this takes the child's point of view and says, who's your family? Children don't take the parent who's been thrown out as having been thrown out of the family. They see their family as having been extended. They have the more valid view. And from their perspective, then, what you get is a family that has two microsystems, so it's binuclear. If you take that notion that you're creating a mesosystem for kids of the home, then you can apply all of Bronfenbrenner. The links and the relationships and the communication and the goal consensus between those two settings should support the child's development. And parents who do divorce well see it that way. Parents who do divorce badly set up a mesosystem for the kids that doesn't support their development. So you just take all of those hypotheses and connect them to what you're creating for children when you make that ecosystem change. The negotiation process between parents is about power and reciprocity and affect. And changes in the macro system have driven changes in those negotiations. It used to be in the old days that you had one parent at fault. You had one parent who had money, and you could negotiate about contact and custody with the children, and people literally could pay for time with their children. We don't do that anymore. Assets and children are not the same. So assets, financial assets, houses, debts, cars, mortgages, those sorts of things, are in one set of negotiations, and children are assumed to be related to both parents, and those dyadic relationships should be maintained in a healthy way. The assets now, in most states, are just simply divided down the middle, unless somebody bought different assets. Doesn't matter who made the money, it belongs to both parents. And when you separate, you divide it down the middle, that's all you really need to do. And when parents do that kind of division fairly, it increases the positive affect between them, and the reciprocity improves. Fighting over assets always causes negative affect and is about power. And if people just assume they don't have any and courts will divide things down the middle, then they'll be fine. What people need to do is to pass the test when they get the marriage license, that the test that has the item, it doesn't matter who makes more money or who pays the mortgage. Everything that both of us makes belongs equally to both of us and will be divided down the middle when we divorce. That's what the test should say. It's a huge surprise to many people that even though one spouse has not worked, stayed home and taken care of children, and one spouse has paid all the bills, what they have accumulated belongs equally to each of them. And many men particularly just don't fathom that. It makes them extremely angry. When there's only one home, you sell it and divide the assets. Or one parent, if there are assets on both sides, one parent buys it from the other. It's one of the unfortunate things about the having of assets. I need to stop because we have to do the evaluation. So I'm going to continue with some of the other points that I was going to make on Wednesday. So Julie and Greg are going to pass these out. There are number two pencils if you need them. Here. And while they do that, I would like your cooperation in one small
matter. I have learned that tomorrow should be a national holiday, but it isn't. But it is somebody's birthday. So while they pass those things out, I would like you to join me in singing. These are the words. They're familiar to you. Are you ready? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Julie. Happy birthday to you.
Did you get my response?
I didn't.
I suggested the Monday or Wednesday you choose and tell me what part of the day works better for you.
Okay. Sunday is always better.
Yeah. Just email me. Suggest a time. I may have to alter it, but suggest and we'll focus on it. Thank you. Yeah.